Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday. It's the 10th of December, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have you in, with us in your company. It's a, it's a lovely day, isn't it? Any day that we're here, we're all together, we get to talk, it's a good day. We welcome you to do so. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We have a terrific roster of panelists. So let me get to introduce them and then we'll be underway. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I didn't meet the bear this morning.
Good. Excellent.
And I took my long walk, but in the dark. Every minute thinking about the bear, but I've had some writers who have told me the bear is not out there. He's or she is in their den right now. I didn't know that.
Well, they'd be hibernating, right? Is that the deal?
Doesn't seem that cold, but what can I tell you? It wasn't cold this morning.
No, it wasn't that cold, but I don't know how that's. I thought it was more seasonal, but I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What is that? Does anybody? Isn't there that Jerry Reed song of the preacher and the bear? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know Jerry Reed, but I don't know that particular tune.
It's something like, "Hey Lord, if you can help me, for goodness sakes, don't help that bear." I believe that's the lyric. If I have that correctly.
And I know Big Mike for the next break will probably have Jerry Reed of the Preacher and the Bear.
Yeah, Preacher and the Bear. Good stuff. All right. We also welcome to the proceedings Jim Henler. He is Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm good.
Good to have you here. Thank you very much, as always. We have a lot to talk to you about, sir. All this Facebook stuff going on. We got to figure out what's going on here. You'll keep us straight on this. Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics, Vera Acarius-Kelly. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Well, good
day to be on the radio.
It is a good day to be on the radio. Isn't every day a good day to be on the radio? Wend Ellerby joins us, Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist, one of the first women to anchor the national news. Of course, known for her work on NBC, NBC Overnight, and then, of course, for years and years on Nick News. And we couldn't be more delighted to have her with us. Good morning, Wend Ellerby. How are you?
I am fine and dandy, Joe, and it's beautiful still here. The snow outside is all still snow at the moment.
Hmm.
Go out there and look for bear tracks, will you please?
So, Alan, sometimes you meet the bears, and sometimes the bears meet you.
And if you leave off the M, you got eat.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, there is that wonderful, wonderful joke that is in the movie The Imitation Game about two men hiking in the woods, and they come across a bear. One of them starts to lean down and tie his shoelaces. The other says, "What are you doing that for? You know you can't outrun a bear." And the man tying his shoelaces says, "I don't have to outrun the bear. I only have to outrun you."
And nice. See, Alan, if there were more people out at 4 a.m, you wouldn't have that problem.
There's one guy who walks by me every morning. He's got a light on his head, and he's got two dogs. And as I'm coming down the thing with my light on my head, he's on the other side. And those dogs sometimes, but not today, sometimes really yell at me. Yeah. That's not a pleasant experience.
No, the bears, the dogs, goodness, Alan, you got a lot going on there.
I do.
It's a tough life.
Maybe you should stay indoors.
Maybe you should
stay indoors. I
don't
know. Maybe people who walk at 4 a.m. deserve what they get.
Sweet. Very nice. Very nice.
All right. So the big story is about Facebook. U.S. and states say that Facebook illegally crushed the competition. Regulators are accusing the company of buying up rising rivals to cement its dominance over social media. The Federal Trade Commission in more than 40 states out of the 50 accused Facebook Facebook on Wednesday of buying up its rivals. They called for the deals to be unwound, escalating regulators' battle against the biggest tech companies in a way that could remake the social media industry. Federal and state regulators of both parties who have investigated the company for over 18 months said in a separate there were separate lawsuits that Facebook's purchases, especially Instagram for $1 billion in 2012 and WhatsApp for $19 billion 2 years ago, eliminated competition that could have one day challenged the company's dominance. Since those deals, Instagram and WhatsApp have skyrocketed in popularity, giving Facebook control over three of the world's most popular social media and messaging apps. The applications have helped catapult Facebook from a company started in a college dorm 16 years ago, just think of that, in only 16 years, to an internet powerhouse valued at more than $800 billion. Okay, Jim, let me begin with you on what this means. Explain this to us. We heard from the New York State Attorney General Letitia James, who led the multi-state investigation into Facebook, calling for the courts to stop the company from its anti-competitive behavior to protect small businesses. So do they have a case here?
This is a very interesting situation, Joe. Let me give you a little bit of the backstory on this. First of all, the more liberal side of the political spectrum has long felt that big tech has too much power, is becoming monopolistic. Companies such as Google, Facebook, some of the others, Amazon, Microsoft, have been seen as really having too much power, controlling too much of our, the innovation economy in the U.S. There's a lot of different terms for this, but really they're a monopoly. And the monopolies have generally been protected by the more conservative side of our government, which has traditionally felt that government should not meddle in the economic policies of companies. So we should not have a commercial policy, and monopoly power should be, used very, very rarely. So what's changed is over the past few months, looking for a scapegoat in the election, the right wing has really started saying Google, Facebook, some of these other social media providers have been anti-right wing, right? And some of this has been because as white supremacy has gotten more dangerous, these sites have tried to clamp down on it. As lies have propagated and they're now working to fight misinformation, the people who tell more lies are, of course, more upset by what's going on. So you have this very interesting political alliance which has formed with, at the moment, Facebook primarily and Google secondarily in the headlights. So that's kind of the political backstory. Then the technical backstory is both of these companies that Facebook acquired were given regulatory permission. So they were not, so Facebook is arguing back, how can you say now these were legal things? Meanwhile, Facebook right now is looking to acquire some new companies. So many people think that this is more to put a halt on some of that than to really get them broken up. This is the kind of lawsuit that's going to go on for years. Mm-hmm. And so you shouldn't expect any interesting immediate thing. But I think it's a warning shot fired across the bow of the tech companies. And there's a lot of other things in that space going on. We already talked a couple months ago about what was going on with TikTok.
Yeah.
Where, again, they used Chinese ownership as an excuse to try to break that up. And there's, some other things going on in that space, too.
So let me ask two follow-up questions, and we'll break out here for the rest of the group, of course. But one is, but it is important to note, and Facebook is saying this, but federal regulators, all of these acquisitions were cleared when they were done, right? So So that's right. One thing. Isn't it hard then to come back and say, oh, yeah, you're trying to do this when they said, yeah, it's okay that you're trying to do this? And also of the states, which, what, up to 46 are complaining, it seems that if you get that much, there must be – what is the impact on the specific states that is concerning them so much?
So the specific impact on the states is that states control a lot of the trade, and states want small companies to be growing in their own states because that helps build their tax revenue and things like that. So when you have these huge companies in a few places, as opposed to a wide spread out of companies, that's bad for the states and localities where these things would be located, or in fact, where a lot of the workers live. So for example, Facebook New York has a very big presence, but they're not really seen as a New York company. So some of it is that the regulators are hoping that Facebook will voluntarily do some things. Some of it is because of the power Facebook has to control information is worrying people. If I, as a university, want to do some kind of studies about misinformation and disinformation, I have to go through a process called an institutional review board, which checks to make sure that against some federal rules, I'm not going to be hurting anybody, offending anybody, causing certain kinds of harm. Facebook and other big companies aren't under that same regulatory regime, so they don't have to do that. So there's a lot of things that have been done that have come out which have got people upset. So the argument is essentially that at the time that Facebook did these acquisitions, we were just looking at one acquisition at a time. So mm-hmm. the government can say, when we said it was fine to get one of these companies, we just looked at that impact at that moment. Now we see a history of this happening. We see Facebook getting ready to buy a company that actually probably very few people have heard of, called Customer with a K. But Customer is a company that manages lots and lots of how companies interact with their customers, some of the things you get in the mail with. Saying, here are our sales today, things like that. Some of these point of contact information systems. And Facebook feels that with their information powering that, you could do much more. So really, in a sense, the argument is Facebook controls a lot of information about who we are, who we like, what we buy, things like that. And they can essentially sell access to this. So one of the things that, and we'd now be getting down a little bit more into the weeds. If you want to do geeking, we can get there. But Facebook has a way they could make that stuff more available. It's called the Open Graph. And they could make that available either for free or at a much lower cost or to all companies rather than just the companies they approve. So some people feel that's what the government wants to see, something that will let more companies form in more places using that information and not have them all feed this one big company in one place.
So maybe I can also add something, Joe and Jim, on an international level. The European Commission has also gone after Facebook, and that started a bit earlier, on two levels that are very similar to what Jim just described, namely antitrust issues and also how data is gathered and then monetized for advertising purposes. The European Commission has, or in Europe in general, there are much stricter rules in terms of what you collect and how you collect it about the information you collect about customers. And the European Commission has investigated now for at least a year and a half on this issue and challenged the kind of data collection and processing that has been monetized by Facebook through this combination of various platforms. And that inquiry is ongoing, and a lot of Europeans are paying very close attention because that is an even bigger market than here in the United States. So this is, in essence, pressure coming now from two different, entirely different regions and different kinds of economic blocks in that sense. And it's very serious, I think, in terms of an antitrust investigation into Facebook and such large corporations that maintain and manage detailed information and put bits together that weren't supposed to be collected and put together. And also, it's in a sense, the argument is that they're killing off either by purchasing potential competitors or by denying access to funding for potential competitors to rise within the marketplace that is so focused on Facebook.
Yes, that's right. So there's really two different issues going on here.
30 seconds. Go ahead.
The European issue is more around the privacy and control of information, and they've been after Google and now Facebook. U.S., we don't have those privacy regulations, so we go after them more on the monopoly side, but really the two are very tied together.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we continue and come back, we will check in with the other members of our panel. We will also move on to mail and other issues. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Simple as that. Write to us at panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Jim Henwer, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Linda Ellerbe make up the panel this morning. We'll be right back after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. Panel at WAMC.org to add your voice to the conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan, anything you'd like to add to the conversation?
Well, as usual, yes. Joe, well, Facebook is extremely popular, I have to confess. I use it every once in a while. I live with a woman who I happen to be married to who is pretty user-friendly with the, with Facebook. A lot of people love Facebook, and I think that that's going to be the problem. So I'm always looking for political motives in why people are doing things. In the case of our attorney general in New York State, she is obviously the lead attorney on this and has a lot of other people following her. I have a feeling that she's going to be popular among some for going after what is a clear monopoly and unpopular with all those people who are saying, leave my Facebook alone. Why are you dealing with this monopoly as opposed to so many others? And I would like to just inject that into the conversation.
Yeah, that's a great point about the other monopolies, because they're certainly, I mean, they're not hard to find, right, Jim?
You know, the technical definition of a monopoly is very complicated, Joe. And our country has long had this sort of love-hate relationship with some of these things. But as Alan says, the political dimension, you know, is where a lot of this comes from. And, you know, it's very interesting. So, you know, just another related story that's on, you know, the Defense Authorization Bill, which is a 3,240-page piece of legislation, has been threatened to be vetoed by the president because it doesn't contain a repeal of something called CDA Section 230. Now, if that sounds like an obscure little thing, CDA Section 230 is what lets all these companies be free from libel suits and slander suits and from being accused of misinformation and things like that. So again, it's an attack by this government on specifically Facebook and Google, and it would also impact a lot of other companies. So we see several different things going on at the same time. And it's, again, it's this combination of scapegoating these companies because of the election and a real political concern about the power of these monopolies, because these companies have gotten so big they control a major section of our country's economy. So it's a very interesting dynamic that's playing out at the moment.
Linda?
I'm sorry, really quickly, these are very popular places to go. So we know what we get out of Facebook. We communicate with each other. There's nothing like hearing the doorbell and, you know, having something delivered right from Amazon. So if you start to talk about breaking these things up, there are going to be some people who are concerned. I'm sorry, Linda, your turn.
No, that's okay. I'm enjoying listening to you all and learning. Am I supposed to talk now?
Sure, yes. Talk now.
Okay. Well, first to address Alan's point that, yes, a lot of people use Facebook. They do. And if you talk about breaking it up, and let's make room for more Facebooks, different face kinds of Facebooks, other people, competition, let's make room for that. Okay, let's consider that. Now, let's consider that part of the beauty of Facebook is its monopoly. It is the place to go to do that particular thing for a number of people, to connect with other people, particularly during this time of COVID, but in general in the modern world. Now, let's talk about messaging. If I want to check my messages today, I have to go to email, then text, then Facebook, then Facebook Messenger, and then WhatsApp, because there are many sources sending me messages. Now, granted, Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp and Facebook are one thing right now, but I find it personally annoying that I have to check four things just to find my messages during the day. And I'm not sure people really want to have to find four different Facebooks to find their friends, four different things like Facebook. I bring that up just as a human part of this equation. Now, if I can go back.
It's like having three remotes.
Exactly. Yes. Three. Yeah. My God, we've got five.
Yeah, me too. Okay? Yeah, I was trying to be.
And I live with a tech wizard, and we have five remotes. Just please, the universal remote, and it must exist, nevertheless, in any event. Let's go back and talk about what I think is a bigger problem here, and that is, as you all have pointed out, the FTC okayed these purchases of WhatsApp. And they just did. They okayed both these purchases. Now, part of the problem that's going on is, they didn't know then what it was going to become. And that gets to part of the real problem of regulating these things, which is that how can you regulate what you don't understand? And we have been shown over and over again that too many of the people involved in the regulation looking at these things are old white men who don't use them and haven't a clue how it works. And I go back to 2 years ago when Zuckerberg appeared in front of the Senate. Yeah. And you had senators talking about the Googles and the internet and Orrin Hatch famously asking Zuckerberg, well, how can you sustain a product that your users don't pay for? And Zuckerberg, looking at him as though he's looking at a four-year-old and saying, we sell ads, Senator. Now, there has always been a lag in understanding of the people, the Congress, the agencies who are set up to regulate something, and the understanding of the people at the top of that thing. For years, and as you know, my history is a lot of years of television, for years, people in Congress often did not understand how television worked. They did not understand that now I'm talking about broadcast television now, okay, not subscription TV. They did not understand that the product is not the program. The product is the audience, and the consumer of the product is the advertiser. The advertiser buys the audience. The bigger, i.e. the better the audience, the more the consumer, that's the advertiser, will pay. The people who produce the product, we're the millwrights, and, the spinners. We're not involved in that transaction. That's how television worked. And once again, we're having people trying to regulate who don't understand much about this. And Alan, I heard you earlier this morning when you were talking about Facebook. You said some people are on it all the time. Not usually, Alan. People have text alerts. They have Facebook alerts, and it tells them when something comes on that they want to see. It's not that they're sitting there all the time. Most people aren't sitting there. I don't even know people who sit there on Facebook all day. You and I, at our age, need to understand how much we don't understand about social media. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you are not on it very often, Alan. I have been on your Facebook page.
No.
Joe and I are on it, and Rosemary, we're on it all the time. Okay,
yes. Guilty. Yeah.
I was going to say Rosemary might be one of those people who lives on
Facebook. I'm going to question your knowledge of Facebook, Alan.
That's just fine.
Well, we can ask Alan how many friends he has.
Yeah, Jim. I'm sorry, you were.
So Linda, let me. Push your analogy a little bit to tell you what does concern those of us who do understand these companies and where some of this is coming from. But in television, part of its regulatory framework was that information about watchers had to be shared. So the ratings, some of these things, you know, a company couldn't have secret information about who's watching, how many people are watching. So when you went to sell ads, the competition between the different companies was much more open. So one issue with the social media companies is they do not share that information except with those people who pay them for that information. And it's quite expensive and it's very complex. So one issue is the openness of that. Two is the depth of this information economy. How much about you is being sold and shared? Most people, when they understand that, get very upset. So for example, if you realize that whenever you're using Facebook and it's showing you some product on the side that you might want to buy, different users are seeing different amounts that product costs based on a whole lot of stuff going on back there. And that's also, for example, if you go to a large chain store, Staples or something, and so if you and I both look at the same ad, we may see different prices. They've got that information from the Facebook economy, right? They've paid so that they can know who's buying what, how they're buying it, things like that. So are the newspapers. So again, every time Joe sent us a list of some stories from the Washington Post, the New York Times. When we go to those sites, we see ads. Those ads are picked for us, right? We're seeing different ones, and people are paying for that. So there's this huge amount of money being exchanged in the background that's powered to a very large degree by the information about us that's collected from Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, et cetera. So one of the things that people are very concerned about, and this is where that European versus US thing comes in again, is we have very few rules that give you any power over the use of your own information. We have some rules restricting what the government can do with your information. We have almost no rules about what companies can do. So those of us who worry about civil rights, civil liberties, privacy, et cetera, feel that these companies are often very, very much abusing those rights. And what the monopoly power lets them do is have total control over that information. So many of us think that something that would open more of that information would be a much better thing for our economy, for our nation. So it's not really what the user experiences when you're sitting in front of Facebook. And in fact, that probably wouldn't change at all, even if they were broken up. So Alan, you can make your wife feel much better. She won't have to change. But what's happening behind the scenes and who's making money off of it, that's really what this is all about.
All right.
Jim, let me just say right now that I agree completely with you on this. I think there needs to be regulation. My point was simply that the people doing it need to be more informed.
Absolutely.
To understand it and get it done.
And it should be much less of a political than a economic and et cetera, and privacy and et cetera issue. Yes, agreed.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have letters. We have we spent 45 minutes talking about one of the great antitrust issues of our time, and most of the people want to talk about bears. But we'll get to some letters when we come back. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Barry writes to us and says, bears in their dens is as much or more a product of changing light and season as much as cold or more. Black bear is the only kind we have around here, and they come in many colors. Don't hibernate, a deep coma-like sleep. They, quote-unquote, den, a much lighter sleep from which they can awake in moments anytime they need to. So, in other words, Alan, you should be frightened.
Well, yeah, I should, and also... Every one of those dens has three beds in it, too small, too large.
Yes, yes.
Just right. We all know that.
Yes, that's right. And, well, that, what more is
there? Well, let's not torture it, yes.
Yes. Audrey says to, oh, no, I'm sorry. Garrett says, while a breakup seems unlikely, social media needs scale to be effective. Perhaps it will become more like a utility, allowing companies to use their network more effectively. Like AOL and Windows before it, without concentration, the industry would never have developed the way it has.
Exactly.
Anna says, please discuss the taxes these companies avoid paying to localities and how that is legal or fair to their supporting communities, which cannot avoid tax paying. Do you want to take that one on, Jim?
It's a great question. It's a very complicated issue because, of course, when you make a purchase online, where exactly did you make that purchase? Right. Some states use point of contact. So in New York, we paid New York sales tax. There are states where you don't. But then the product is picked up somewhere, is shipped to you. Things move through different things. Different money moves around. So in fact, many different pieces of commerce happen at many different places. And a lot of companies are able to get around that. But then you also have just the general issue in the U.S. that large companies tend not to pay much in the way of corporate taxes, and the tax bill put through by this Republican administration gave corporations huge tax breaks. So, you know, they are paying virtually nothing and making these, you know, you mentioned an $800 billion company. So yes, there's also a lot of those issues too. And I think that from the state point of view is where a lot of this has the biggest impact.
John checks in and says, Facebook, Google, Amazon, some time ago I read about a proposal that every American should be entitled to a regular cash dividend from these companies owing to their utilization of a public asset, the internet, created with substantial publicly funded taxpayer research and investment. Has this suggestion gained any traction at all? It seems like this wouldn't happen in a million years, Jim.
Yeah, the fast answer is there's a lot of people who believe that's a correct statement, but politically that's so charged in so many ways that it just hasn't happened.
Sue writes, regulators not understanding. That's why congressional offices need people from industry to advise, or why we elect people with ties to industry to Congress. We need their expertise. A vote for non-purity. We got this letter from Michael. I find it interesting that you jump on this latest subject while you, for years, not connected corporate financing of political races and or the role of lobbyists in writing our legislation with corporate control of our everyday lives. As a corporation yourselves, I guess that doesn't qualify as a stated conflict of interest. Alan.
I have no idea what he's talking about. Did somebody else could clue me in here? I just don't get that. We have discussed all of those subjects.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We'll move on. Audrey?
I think I wanted to just comment on the issue of lobbying. Some lobbying is actually very necessary and effective, and some lobbying is actually very destructive to the interests of the American public. So I think the term alone, I just wanted everybody to think about what all lobbying can involve. It could be healthcare advocacy or patient care advocacy, which is very necessary, and it can be lobbying carried out by very narrow economic or technical technological interests that don't advantage the broader public, but just a particular corporate interests. So I think we kind of have to think, you know, in general about using those terms in a more specific context, I believe, instead of just generally using such terminology.
And also, Joe, with the first sentence of the letter said, "You didn't it indicate?"
Yeah, it was
somewhat personal.
No, you should have. It was yeah. Designed as, or
well,
you know.
Therefore, I want to make it clear that WAMC does not lobby. Period. And I'm going to make it even further clear that we have been leaned on by NPR to lobby, and we do not, and will not. So as a matter of policy, so where some people come up with these accusations, I don't know.
Let's go to go from Michael to Mike. Enforcing monopoly laws would make the multiple social platforms interact with each other just like email. Facebook would be forced to interact with and compete with the other companies. No one would have to check multiple social platforms. As far as the more broad concept of competition, the conservatives are simply wrong. Capitalism can exist without competition, which cannot exist without government regulation. Anything on that, Jim?
There's a lot of pieces of that. I'm not sure I totally agree. I think there are things that could be done. So the web is a very interesting place to live, and I've been living here for a very long time. And you really see competition and cooperation. So, for example, when you open your browser and point it at a page, pretty much all our browsers work, even though different companies may support the browsers or creating those pages, et cetera. With Facebook, they control their content. You can't do that. You can't change how they decide to show information or things like that. So you don't have these open standards that we have for many other things on the web. And that's also true of privacy. So, for example, the guy who invented the web, Tim Berners-Lee, is actually now has a company that's working on how do you give back to individual users control over their own information, their own privacy. So you would, in fact, get some money when your information is used, and you'd have the ability to say, I'm willing to let this company know this about me, but I'm not willing to let this other company that I didn't even know wanted that information about me to have it. So there are a lot of things going on in this space. Regulating that, keeping an eye on that. Again, I think a lot of this happens out of public sight for exactly the reason that Linda was talking about before. People just don't understand it and don't know it's happening.
So one of those things, Jim, I was thinking about was also the question of I'm always amazed. Sometimes I see people walk around with their keychains and they have about 20 little plastic tags with scanners hanging off of them.
Yeah.
You know, every store they shop in, they scan in and voluntarily provide all kinds of data, which is then, you know, supposedly kept separately by various companies, except one wonders how potentially that information is put together like a puzzle about where you shop, when you shop, what patterns you have, how much money you spend, what your income level is, and how it's all connected to perhaps health data and your Facebook page. And, you know, this is really quite amazing to me that people so willingly use these scanners because they probably believe that this is the only way to get certain discounts and then share who knows what information with whom.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on a panel at one point with the head of the largest supermarket chain in the United Kingdom. And he said the only thing that controls them is their worry about it getting out, you know, what the public relations nightmare would be if it got out, what they could do with the information. So everything you just said is completely true. And he said, you know, if I offered my patrons, you know, 5% off for giving me the information, they would all say yes. But when they saw what we could do with the information, they'd be scandalized. We've done studies, some of my former students have done studies on these things, that people's expectations and the laws don't line up. People even shown a very readable version of privacy policy. So I actually read privacy policies. I love reading these 30-page legal documents that no one even looks at. They just click, I agree. Some of what's in there would, you know, cause your hair to raise if you could understand it. And in my case, if I had hair. But the, you know, so again, so there's really a lot going on behind the scenes here. And that's really where I think the regulation needs to be explored and understood. And the European Union has done a much better job than the U.S. And there are some bills in front of Congress that have been mostly held up by our current political divides, looking at actually putting some privacy controls in place.
We got this letter from Anthony, who says the danger of Facebook is its simplicity. Images. Everyone can read a picture. Nothing is misspelled. Grammar is not an issue. Facebook is the electronic cave painting version 3.0. Happy posting.
May I comment?
Of course.
That's Instagram, not Facebook.
Yeah, I was going to, thank you.
I would like to address the issue. I talked earlier about the people who are in charge of regulating not understanding it. Let's talk about the users not understanding it. And I have to include myself in that. And I'm on Facebook. I'm an old lady. I'm not on TikTok. My friends are on Facebook. However, I do know enough to know, and I have explained this to so many Facebook friends, and I still see users don't get this. When somebody asks you to share a post that says, I love mothers, share if you believe I love mothers, or if you support, I love puppies, share if you believe that, or I hate bad government, share if you believe this. Repost, share if you... They don't understand that this is a site fishing for your information and information about your friends, and that what you're sharing is access to your information. You're not sharing your love of puppies. They are posting something that so many people would agree with that it will be spread from Facebook user to Facebook user, and your information will be spread with it, access to your information. So I need to advocate for we, the users of social media, need to learn more. And Jim, I cannot imagine trying to read the privacy rules. I have tried occasionally and thought that this was some other language. Certainly it was not English. It appeared to be English, but it did not include words I didn't know, and a lot of words I did know that didn't make sense.
Well, and just to make it worse, there's usually a clause in there that says, and by the way, we can change these rules without telling you anytime we want.
Yeah, that's always
exactly.
fun. All
yes,
right, that's the asterisk.
Donald Trump send money to for my fight to overturn the election when he really means send money to me, because it says so at the bottom.
Another,
this may not be used for Georgia. This may not be used. Possibly won't be used for re-election.
We have to take a break, but I just want the record to show that usually when Linda and I do communicate with each other via Facebook, all we are talking about is the love of our puppies. So
that's right.
for whatever it's worth.
That's right. We're talking about Charlie and Linda. That is our conversation.
That's pretty much all we do.
With political overtones.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue next. News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Vera Akarias-Kelly, and Linda Ellerby on the program this morning. We do welcome your letters, as always, panel@wamc.org.
I was waiting for the Jerry Reed song. Didn't come.
Oh no!
I think we
had trouble finding it.
Finding it.
It's
yeah.
very old. It's very old.
I get it.
But I'm sure eventually we can come up with it.
What was the name of the tune again, Joe?
The Preacher and the Bear.
The Preacher and the Bear.
The Preacher and the Bear. Okay. Let's see. I want to go to other things here, other stories, and what Ray was just talking about in the newscast. Let's go to the Hunter Biden story. Well, I suppose we saw this one coming, but here we go. Hunter Biden is confirming that he is under federal investigation. This came out yesterday afternoon, and it was Hunter Biden himself who ultimately broke the story. I learned yesterday for the first time that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware advised my legal counsel also yesterday that they are investigating my tax affairs. Hunter Biden said this in a statement. I take this matter very seriously, but I am confident that a professional and objective review of these matters will demonstrate that I handled my affairs legally and appropriately, including with the benefit of professional tax advisors. Hunter Biden's attorney did not respond to requests for additional information about the case. Meanwhile, the president-elect said he is deeply proud of his son and said who has fought through difficult challenges, including the vicious personal attacks of recent months, only to emerge stronger. Although the investigation has been ongoing for some time, it is unclear how far along prosecutors consider themselves toward building a criminal case or closing the matter. The subject of an investigation typically is interviewed when prosecutors have amassed a good deal of evidence, though prosecutors seeking to serve subpoenas as recently as this week suggests there is more investigative work to be done. A person familiar with the case said that the investigation continued during the election year, but the agents took care not to overt investigative steps as voting neared that would have made it more widely known. Those precautions, the person said, became unnecessary once the election was over. All right. Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, the first thing everybody is going to make of it is that since Donald Trump has no low, that this may be purposeful. On the other hand, you got to hope that the people in the tax area are professional enough. They have been in past administrations, you know, to know about the separation of church and state here. But I must say that it's the first thing that comes to mind. The second thing is, oh, I don't know. I'm going to get myself into trouble here, but Hunter Biden obviously had a certain attraction to people who were hiring him abroad based on the fact that he was well-connected. One would hope that in the future, the Biden people are very careful, and Hunter himself is very careful about doing anything that would smack of nepotism.
And Alan, it's hard for many to look at this story and not think two things. One, on one side say, okay, Ray just said this in the newscast, there's no belief that this is any connection to the president-elect. But of course, that is going to be a question. And the other thing that many people will think, especially those on the left, is, okay, but what about the president's kids?
Well, one would think that if this was being brought politically, if there was a political reason for it, that's exactly the reason. Not only the president's kids, but the president himself.
Right.
Look, the prosecutors in New York City have been after all that information and have apparently gotten it on the president's taxes. So if I'm the president stewing in the White House, am I saying, will somebody make sure that Hunter Biden gets investigated and that'll show him? I would think so.
Linda?
I agree with Alan. You have to ask yourself the basic question. If he weren't Hunter Biden's son, if he weren't Joe Biden's son, would this be going on? Would he be being investigated? I also agree with Alan that on the Caesar's wife theory that I think Hunter Biden was a fool to take a job that clearly was based on their wanting him because of his connections. I think both things are true. And I think that this was politically motivated. It apparently began in 2018. And perhaps Vera or Jim can explain to me something that I'm a little unclear about. I was under the impression that if you were in trouble for your taxes, that your first knowledge of it would come from the IRS. And not the Attorney General of Delaware's office, and that the IRS would come to you and say, we're questioning this, we're auditing this, we're going to do this. And if they then felt that there was more, they would go and you would hear. But I thought first you would be dealing with the IRS before the federal government stepped up on your door with criminal charges or whatever these charges are and said, hey, you, please help me understand this.
Vera, any idea?
Well, I agree with Linda. I mean, this seems like we don't know 100% that Hunter Biden may not have been notified by the IRS, but he just identified, I think, publicly that he's under investigation. So maybe there was some wordsmithing going on. But I would expect, just like Linda said, you would get notified by the IRS first.
Jim.
So, again, I'm not sure that's a true statement, because I know tax fraud prosecutions don't happen through the IRS, but I must admit that I'm not an expert on that.
But that's why I asked. That's why I was going to ask. That's why I brought it up for you to answer, Jim.
Yeah, Jim. What the hell's the matter with you?
Let's put it this way. I'll just put a random. I'll just make a random guess, and then we can. And then the listeners will correct us.
Well, that's true.
So one of our listeners must know the answer to this. But my belief is that, you know, there've been many criminals brought to bear as tax cases rather than, you know, some other things. And there are famous examples of that. And I wonder if they were approached by the IRS first or not. I don't think there's a law that says you have to.
Well, and Alan, I'll go back to something that you've said on other matters in the past, but we don't really know that he wasn't, right?
You know, I was just sitting here ready to chip in and say something very unpopular with our audience. There is a possibility, even though on first blush it would look like the president was sitting there stewing and ordered this up, or might have ordered this up, that maybe Hunter Biden did something wrong.
Right, which gets back to Linda's question, though. If he wasn't yes, he's done something wrong, but would this be investigated in the matter of which it's being investigated if he wasn't the president-elect's son?
Don't look at me. I don't know.
Well, the investigation began, according to the reports, in 2018. He was not the president-elect's son then, but he was pretty much clear that he was high for a candidate,
yeah,
high in line, mm-hmm, to be the Democratic nominee.
Or, as we always say, even without that, he was connected.
Yeah.
He was still
the vice president.
Former vice president of the United States, yeah.
Right. Go ahead, Linda. I'm sorry.
No, that's all. All
right.
Nothing further to add.
Let's see. Let's go to a couple of letters, and then we'll move on to other subjects. A lot of these having to do with Facebook. Mike says, canceling my Facebook account was like leaving an abusive relationship. At first, there was a sense of unease and almost withdrawal, and then eventually a feeling of happiness and freedom. Brian says, the older I get, the more I miss the 80s. If you wanted to know how somebody was, you picked up the rotary phone, called them. We got our social media from the newspaper and magazine, and we did not have everybody forcing their point of view on us every time we pull out our phones out of our pockets. Trisha.
And the government broke up AT&T, which was the monopoly that was controlling the phones. So, you know, again, it's what the user experience and what's happening behind the scenes can be very different. And you know, you may miss the old days, but, you know, there's a lot of positives and negatives, as with any technology. We're more connected, but a lot of that connection is in bad ways that, you know, make it easier to spread propaganda, make it easier to talk only to your information bubbles, things like that. So this is part of what we study in a field called web science. You might notice when I'm introduced, it's as a professor of computer, web, and cognitive sciences. That web science stuff is exactly the stuff we try to study, the impact of this technology and its use across society, internationally.
Alan, were you going to say something?
Yes, I was. I was just going to say, boy, we were great when we busted up AT&T. And I suppose the fact that we're writing these checks here at our house to AT&T has come back stronger than ever makes you sit up and take notice about some of these, you know, efforts to bust things up.
Hmm. Right. Let's go to Bobby, who says, let's not forget Jared Kushner is under congressional investigation for his billions of dollar loan from Saudis for his Park Avenue atrocity. We make that point, care of Bobby. Trisha says, what are your thoughts?
Can I just point out that this is not that with Biden, this is not a congressional investigation.
Correct.
That's a different thing.
Trisha says, what are your thoughts about companies like Ancestry that we voluntarily give our personal data to? Is the knowledge provided to us worth it? What could they do with our DNA? that would harm us? All right, there's a good question, Jim.
Great question.
Our physical DNA. I think we'll have to wait for someone, a geneticist, to answer that question.
but we're giving our private information. So you spit in a tube, you send it to...
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question. Yes, well, so... Yeah.
Yes.
The question being
that we voluntarily give this data to.
So, again, what we do in many places is we either voluntarily give our data. So, you know, let's take an easier one. You get one of these quiz sites on Facebook and you say, oh, that'll be fun. I'll do that.
Right.
On some of them, you give them all your information. Some of them you don't. Telling the difference can be difficult if you don't know where to look. Same thing with the DNA. So a lot of the people I know who invested in that company say they invested because they saw it as a way of gathering information. We know who's living where, how they're connected. And once you, you know, again, yet another thing you connect back into that whole information society.
To say nothing of, Jim, you know this better, you know better than anybody. I go online because I have low-grade diabetes. Not terrible, but I have it. And I go by, and I see a site, and I go there. And then 2 days later, I'm besieged with diabetes, you know.
So not only that, if you have a – people keep saying to me, you know, I was just discussing diabetes, and suddenly I get all these ads. I'm like, do you have an Alexa?
Yeah.
You know, they have some rules about what they can and can't share, but, you know, things are listening to us, things are watching us, things are hearing us, and you've signed the papers that said you're perfectly happy with them doing that when you bought that television or when you put that, you know, personal assistant in or where you loaded that app on your phone. And helping people understand this is one of the things that we think is important, but at the same time, a lot of people who do know what's going on, you know, I know exactly what Facebook is doing with my information to a very large degree. I'm still a very heavy Facebook user. I just think hard about what I do and don't share.
I want to go back to the ancestry thing because this fascinates me. So whether it be 23andMe or Ancestry, you spit in the tube, you send it to them, and then they tell you you can have both an Ancestry file and then a health file, right? So then it comes back, and sometimes invariably it'll say, help us complete your profile. So you go onto it, and it'll say 86% of the people that are in your DNA group, whatever that is, in your DNA group, have their urine will smell after they eat asparagus. And then they ask, does yours? And you think to yourself, now how can that help science? So what is that? And I'm not making this up. This is a real thing. Yep. So like why? So is that to help us better understand urine and asparagus? Or does that have a more duplicitous purpose?
You'll never know.
So it's important to understand that there's two different kinds of way this information is being used. One is for sort of generic health related and understanding about how people inherit diseases and who's more susceptible and things like that. And some is for the financial side, which is what I was talking about before.
Right.
But on the medical side, so that's a particularly known recessive gene in certain places and dominant in others. So being able to track those things makes it so we're better able to say from things that are observable what's happening, you know, what are the patterns of who's connected to who and how the disease is spread. So some of that is for very legitimate purposes that might be hard to realize. It's not that they want to sell you, you know, more asparagus or urine, urine deodorizers. Although I've just written down urine deodorizer is how I'm going to get rich.
Yes, but isn't the overall issue that many of, or I don't even know if many of us, but that some of us may be concerned about just answering the question because we don't know what the end game is.
I think that's right. And I think some people are concerned and don't do it. But an awful lot of people just think, hey, you know, they're going to help me do you know more, so I'll give them more information. Or, you know, I see value in being friendly with 23andMe, so I'm going to continue to give them this stuff. I mean, it's very complicated to work through all of this stuff. And, you know, I mean, one of the reasons I like teaching about this is because the students know so much more than I do that I get to learn from them about, you know, what sites are they using? How are they controlling this stuff? Who is and isn't aware? A lot of my students are perfectly fine with sharing that information. They say, I know it's being shared. I don't see a harm. Right. They're giving me a value in exchange for this information. You know, Google helps me search better. Facebook helps me connect to people. But then when you say, look at what's happening downstream, that's when people start to say, maybe I have to think about this one.
Mira?
And also, I wanted to comment on the issue of it's not only private companies that access such information, but in certain countries, such data is collected by government entities. So if you are working within a democratic, fully functioning liberal democratic system, you might have a sense of this data being used for good, or your sense that this data will not be shared with anybody who pays for it or wants it. For example, I know a lot of people who say, oh, it's wonderful to do these DNA analyses because you not only find out about your heritage, but you might be able to find, you know, there was a couple of famous police investigations that identified with the help of DNA long searched for murders. Right. And so people have this idea that it's going to be used for good. But there are a lot of really dangerous government entities that want to use access to such DNA data to find relatives of dissidents that want to arrest people and put pressure on family members and intimidate and threaten. So this may not be something all that familiar to people in the United States, but these kinds of mechanisms are used in the Middle East sometimes, right? So it is important for everyone to think through very carefully what kind of data you provide on your DNA and where it might be used. And it also depends on if you're, you know, where you have relatives. Are they living in the United States, or are some people you know, that belong to your family, perhaps somewhere in North Africa or in Saudi Arabia or somewhere else that might feel the consequences 5 or 10 years down the line.
We got a letter from Melinda. Go ahead, Linda.
I just want to point out how contradictory we are as humans. I mean, here we are having this discussion. At the same time, I read a long article yesterday about why contact tracing has failed in coronavirus in the United States. And of the three reasons given, one of the big ones was that people refused to answer the questions on the telephone when a tracer would call and say, whom have you been with? Who have you been in contact? Have you been in contact with anybody who's blah, 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 blah? They wouldn't answer the questions. And so many of these are the same people, and I include all of us, who are happily giving over all our personal information in order to show pictures of our puppies.
Yeah. Well, none of this makes sense, right? I mean, there's contradictions all over the place.
Well, and, you know, that goes further than that. So, you know, medical information is far more protected than anything else. Yet the biggest benefit to society would be researchers having access to that to reduce healthcare costs. But the healthcare companies and the privacy advocates joined together and created this set of laws that to a large degree make it hard to do that. So you have, you know, again, what you often see is these strange alliances of people trying to protect information with people who make money off of that information being protected. And in a capitalist society, it's hard to break those things down. But I will say that
to take a break,
government and things like that have a much harder time controlling these things than companies do.
All right, we're going to pause there. When we come back, we'll do our last go round with our terrific panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org.
Yay! Here comes the preacher. Well, the preacher went out a-hunting. It was home on Sunday morning.
was against his religion. But he took a shotgun along. He got him a mess of mighty fine quail and one old scraggly hat. But on the way home, he crossed the path of a great big grizzly bear. Well, the bear got down, looked ready to charge. The preacher never seen nothing quite that large. They looked each other right smack in the eye. Didn't take that preacher long to say bye. The preacher, he run till he spotted a tree. Said, up in that tree's where I ought to be. By the time that bear made a grab for him, the preacher was a-sitting on top of that limb. Scared to death, he turned about. He looked to the sky and began to shout, hey, Lord, you delivered Daniel from the bottom of the lion's den. Jonah from the belly of the whale, and then the Hebrew children from the fiery furnace, so the good books do declare, hey Lord, if you can't help me, for goodness sake, don't help that bear. Yeah. Look
out. Well, there you go, Alan. There it is.
Doesn't get better than that.
You know what I didn't know, and I should have known this, because I thought, I guess I did know this, but I had forgotten. Iowa always associated the song with Jerry Reed, but it was actually originally performed by Phil Harris.
Phil Harris.
Which you can hear him do. It's very, very funny. Well, good stuff.
I wonder how many people remember Phil Harris. That's the question.
Well, Phil, you do. Linda does. Linda does.
Linda does, and Alan does.
Well, I do because I grew up listening to old-time radio on my public radio station as a kid. That was the only thing what we were able to listen to. But on the Jack Benny program, he was regular was with, what's her name? Alice Faye.
Alice Faye.
Yep. All right. Let's go back to what we were talking about. I don't really want to, but we can. Let's see. We'll go. Go ahead.
Can I ask Vera a question?
Yeah.
Vera, this morning on NPR, they played a piece about increasing reversion among some people to, you know, basically fascism, Nazism in Germany. And I said, I hope Vera's going to be on today so she can tell us whether this is a danger or not.
Yeah, so there are these very strange, in my view, very strange and scary groups that are emerging in Germany. They are, you know, very loud minority, very small minority. They're very loud and aggressive. And they have gathered in both Berlin and Leipzig, two, you know, Eastern German cities, in terms of organizing themselves around QAnon, sort of conspiratorial theories. And they're involved in suggesting the most bizarre theories related to attacks against Angela Merkel, and suggesting that it's a conspiracy against personal freedom that people should mask. And so there are these gatherings of like 10,000 people or so. And a lot of, I was talking with my niece, who was a university student in Leipzig, quite a bit about this. And she also says it's just a very bizarre grouping, and they are now put, Querschläger is one of those groups, and they are now put, they were notified yesterday that they will be under police observation, which is something when you're against the liberal tradition of, you know, post-World War II Germany, an organization can either be by the democracy branch of the government, can be put under investigation or can be observed, which is one step away from being no longer permitted to gather and organize. So this is a particularly German post-historic development. Yes,
the story, Vera, was about what you just mentioned. If the police are watching them, who's watching the police? Because the story was about the infiltration of the police agencies.
Yeah, I mean, these have very serious concerns because there are numerous police units that have been disbanded now because they were involved in counter-democracy activities as well.
Interesting.
You know, so this has been a scary development. I agree.
And I'd like to add to it that we are
we kind of like to be naive about things. Yeah. You talked about the liberal post-war government in Germany. Why is it we think that because the government seemed to change, that attitudes throughout Germany changed? Mm. We have learned very clearly that when the South lost the Civil War, it lost the war, but attitudes didn't change in the South and have been handed down, many of them. Now, please, I'm making a generalization, and I don't mean that, but you know what I'm talking about. We have hatred today in this country and racism that is a leftover from all the way back to the Civil War, a heritage. Why we think the far right wing in Germany or Nazism is extinguished or not in the hearts and minds of some people, I believe to be naive. And on that note, I would like to take a moment today before we get off the air. Today is the first day of Hanukkah. Tonight is the first night of Hanukkah, the 10-day celebration. And I would like to wish my daughter and every other Jew around the world a peaceful, happy Hanukkah. May it be a good one for everybody.
Or at least a better one.
Yeah.
On behalf of the Chavarim, I thank you very much for the 8 days of peace.
I
was going to try to say Happy Hanukkah in Hebrew because I have been practicing, but I have not the courage.
I'm impressed you even tried. That's good. Good for you.
Okay, Hanukkah Sameach. Is that even close?
Hanukkah Sameach.
Can anyone tell me?
Yeah. Oh, you
that
had
was
more.
Very close. You just have to learn how to do the ch sound.
Yeah, you knew that.
Hanukkah Sameach. Shemo Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu. Am I getting close?
It's a different prayer, but yeah.
Don't push
it. Yes, it is. I know. I'm just trying to get the
ch. Don't push it.
Just to make you feel better, Linda. That one does. That Linda, if I was being a purist, I would say actually that one doesn't have the ch sound.
Oh dear.
We have a ch sound and a ch sound.
Oh dear.
This is the best. But absolutely. I would.
But
just,
let's. But it's better to talk about bears.
So. Well, yes, just a quick.
Yes. The bear came through the window and ate my Hebrew.
Well, a quick programming note, but at kick off Hanukkah, we have a special that we've been playing. It's been around for 30 years. They change it every year, but they've been doing it for 30 years at NPR with Susan Stamberg. It's called Hanukkah Lights, and that will be our special at 11 o'clock this morning. So after Congressional Corner, we'll be playing that, and all of our other specials throughout the holiday seasons will be on. And certainly. Happy Hanukkah on this beginning of the season. We have, I think, 2 minutes and just some quick things here. Jim, I read the story the other day in the Times Union, and I thought of you. I was wondering if you knew this young man. Nathan Wang was a student at Shaker High School, and he does what kids do. He wrote a bill on artificial intelligence. He sent it to he walked into Paul Tonko's office in Washington, put it on his desk, and it just got passed by Congress. So, you know, typical stuff.
What was it?
Yes, I actually do know. I do know a lot about it. It's a great feel-good story, Joe. The student was part of one of these programs where kids go down to D.C. They get to learn about how things work. And one of the things they do as one of their activities is to create a bill. His bill got picked up. He asked some of us at the university to look at it. His father is an RPI professor. I got a call from Paul Tonko's office asking me, you know, whether we thought this was the right way to phrase some things. And RPI was one of the universities and entities that endorsed the bill. It got wrapped into that, the defense authorization bill. So it's on page 2,322 of the 3,200 page bill, but it's in there, and it would, ask the National Science Foundation to study what's the right way to bring more information about AI. And in fact, I suggest we also add some of the stuff we've been discussing down to the high school level so that people graduating high school would actually have some understanding of the technologies that are underlying these very sites we were discussing earlier in the show.
So what's the bill? What's the bill that it's in?
It's actually part of the. It got wrapped into the defense authorization bill, but it's a bill about asking the government to fund research and how to teach this
for artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I got it. But now we know, right, that that the president is threatening to veto that bill.
That's right.
And it's probably because of this kid.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way:
it's a bad joke. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, the bill has about 1,000 clauses, and Trump is threatening to veto it because one clause that he wants that it doesn't have, and two clauses it has, which would allow the renaming of Confederate sites, bases named after Confederate generals. He wants to make that illegal. Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me you took the joke seriously. That would be
no,
wrong.
I'm not taking it. I'm not. I just thought it would be a good educational moment to talk yet again about how unbiased our current president is.
And you will remember when Arlo on Alice's Restaurant discovered when he was in the White House that his 18 minutes of Alice's Restaurant had been eliminated by Nixon. That was his theory, that's what the 18 minutes were. Anyway, forget it.
18 and one half minutes.
Right. All right.
Which is exactly how long
or
Alice's 17 Restaurant
and one half
goes.
Rounded up to 18, I believe it was.
We are out of time. Our show has gone in all corners this morning, and I couldn't be more pleased.
Gone downhill.
Yeah. No, I think we've really branched out and talked about a lot of interesting things this morning. Well, my thanks to everybody. I echo certainly what Linda said. Happy Hanukkah. I thank you all for being with us. Alan, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Joe. Linda, Vera, and Jim, thank you. Be well, and we'll talk soon. We'll come back and do the Congressional Corner right after this.